folks.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, sir.
Morning, guys.
I know.
Exactly. You're about to learn. There's going to be a lesson taught.
Yes,
and the lesson
take out
is
your scantrons, please, and your number two pencils.
Remember that? Remember the old number two?
I do.
Chief lesson here today, ladies and gentlemen, is how to get very far in this business with no talent whatsoever.
That's us.
We'll open it up to you guys. Anything you want to talk about? We're happy to answer. We're here, of course, to talk about chiefly Geeking Out, our show, which begins on Sunday right after Preachers
with a Comic-Con special, and then we're off the air for a few weeks. And we come back with 8 episodes. That'll be every week.
I think we can vouch for the Comic-Con special. We've now seen it from end to end. I mean, not only are we in it, we created the content, but we've seen the cut. And it's pretty fucking dope, man. This is a show that I came into later. Like, first, Greg and Brad came up with the show, put it together, and then I was approached, like, when it went to AMC, and I got involved. And I got involved because it sounded like a show that I would watch in a heartbeat. Like, the idea was to do Sports Center for those of us that don't necessarily watch sports and watch this kind of stuff instead. So it turned into exactly that. It's like a news magazine show with great pieces, fun pieces and stuff. And because we've worked in the business for a while and because we know people and stuff, we get cool access and get to do stuff a little off of the typical kind of junket interview or something.
Yeah, the original idea was to have a peer-to-peer discussion instead of it being a soundbite on a red carpet. Let's talk with people that we've worked with before, and usually you run out of those friends very quickly. But I personally have been doing this, Kevin's been doing this for so long, we've either worked with or crossed paths with some of these, the most incredible makers, actors, producers, writers, directors, comic artists. And so when Kevin came on board, it was like, what, are you kidding me? This is now, he is an executive producer of this show. Don't get it wrong. He's being very humble when he says that, but he's making this show. I'm along for the ride. This is not a job. I get to hang out with Kevin Smith for 10 hours every day. Hello. That's like eating donuts all day. Almost as good.
And that's what we do pretty much. Yeah. Donuts all day to maintain these physiques.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
So what triggered the hibernating
vendors
to wake up and start the show?
Luckily, somebody agreed that there should be a show. AMC was like, oh, this could live here.
Yeah.
AMC is, as we all know, the risk of taking its network alive right now. They changed the game when they did shows like Mad Men and Breaking Bad and, of course, Walking Dead. Walking Dead and Robert Kirkman enabled me to have a television show. I tried once years ago, the Clerks cartoon. We made 6, they aired 2. So I felt like me and TV, like even though TV raised me, I would never really have a home in TV. TV's changed dramatically, as we all know. So thanks to the advent of AMC, suddenly I had a chance. Robert Kirkman's show took off, The Walking Dead, of course. And after the first season of The Walking Dead, there was a discussion internally at AMC of a fear that the audience that populated the season 1 of Walking Dead gave its ratings would not come back if they had to go off the air and create season 2. So they're like, fuck, we're gonna go create season 2, and all that audience we've built up is gonna go away and might not come back. How do we keep the audience sticking around until season 2? Which always makes me laugh, because there was a time in this world where somebody was like, what if nobody watches The Walking Dead? And because of that, I got through a very narrow crack. They were looking for what they called geek programming. And a friend of mine, Elise Seiden, who was a producer on Comic Book Men, had worked with me on a movie, Red State, and she knew this guy who ran Original Media, the company that produced Comic Book Men. Suddenly, I was in business with AMC. AMC wanted to do something. We were like, what about Pawn Stars in a comic book store? And suddenly, that happened. And that, thanks to being at AMC now for a few years, we're going to season 6 of that. When this kind of popped open, they thought of me. He's like, you like this shit? And I was like, fuck, I love this shit. And this is the network that, like...
And he also likes this shit.
I love that shit as well.
I mean, also, AMC, yes, without question, this is a home and a great home, the perfect home for the show.
The only home that... There's no network that would have done this show. This is the network that could do the show because they've done Talking Dead, the first network to be like, let's do a talk show, like about, well, maybe not the first network to, let's do a talk show about show we just watched, but the one that's
smashed her.
Totally right. But certainly the people that exploded it into the stratosphere, like, it's mind numbing when you think that, like, The Talking Dead is the number one late night talk show on the planet, you know, and that's like everyone
talks
about.
That's crazy.
They talk about the two Jimmys, like which one's on top? Fucking Hardwick's on top, son. Yeah. Like it's our time now.
Now so, that is exactly what I was going to say, is that the audience is now ready for this. When you first came to Comic-Con, the audience was a lot smaller, and you know, I always do this parent-proof thing. You know, my parents, my dad's 82, he knows about this culture now, and he appreciates it, he watches this stuff, and he has questions that go beyond just the episode and how do you work the DVR. You know, he cares about these characters, and he's, is he a geek? I don't know, but he's the dad of a geek, and it's a right time for this show, and the audience is big enough that I think, you know, it doesn't have to be specific to the show that just preceded it, which in our case is going to be Fear the Walking Dead, but we're talking about all kinds of stuff. We got Matt Damon on the show. We got J.J. Abrams on the show. And then we got Matt Damon on the show. And then J.J. Abrams on the show.
As you can see, we exhausted our fucking address book in the first episode. We don't know what we're going to do for episode two. That's going to be the episode where we reach out to people who've hated us historically.
Exactly.
That's a long fucking list.
Yeah.
Kevin, as someone who, by your own admission, tends to work a little blue, is it hard for you to kind of remain in the structure of AMC without, using your whole vocabulary?
There was a challenge early on in my career. Once I realized that, you know, when you do a TV interview, you got to play the ball where it lays. You can't just be there like, these motherfuckers don't understand come on TV. They're like, no, none of that works. None of it.
Maybe
we won't air. We can air the or something like that.
So in the pilot that we've seen, Kevin's talking, and we have somebody on set who just pushes a button every time and bleeps it out, and then he's like, oh, shit. They're using all of it, and they're bleeping it out. And the interviews are not your traditional interviews. You can see it on the faces of the people. Charlie Hunnam, we just interviewed Charlie. And in the middle, you can see on his face, like, oh, we're having a real conversation here. This is wonderful. And he's really articulate, really knows film history and is smart. And it goes beyond, I'm starring in, you know, a movie. Here's the theory behind this and what I'm geeking out about and what I appreciate. That's amazing. I mean, that is, it's not, unfortunately, it's not quite Charlie Rose, where you just let the conversation go. We are cutting it up and we have to edit down, but we're going to have a huge online presence as far, hopefully the audience comes, but a lot of content that people are going to soak up, and hopefully a lot of this audience is going to soak it up. It's going to go a lot deeper.
But yes, I've learned to stop cursing on television. I had 5 years of Comic Book Man actually training, you know, so we do that show, we're not allowed to curse either. You can get close though, AMC lets you get away with some shit. I mean, literally you can say shit. I watch The Walking Dead all the time, so anytime they like break a taboo, I'm like, there's one word we could always say.
That's
and
funny.
Then when we put our edit forward and like, you can't say that, I'm like, they fucking said it on The Walking Dead while stabbing someone to death. Fair enough, let it ride. So, it's fun to be able to...
Is that why you called me a nipple the other day when we were shooting?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't know
why that happened.
It's always fun to, like, you know, be able to switch it up. I don't know if it's fun, but it's like, everyone creates little challenges for themselves, right? This is a big challenge. It's like, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to go to Greece or whatever the fuck. But then there's the little fucking challenges as well, where you're just like, let me see if I can be in this space and play by the rules. Like, I call it coloring within the lines. My whole career has been about, like, look at the crayons and just ruining the book. But sometimes when you go to somebody else's house and they give you a fucking coloring book, you can't do that. You just got to color within the lines. You know, and sometimes it's funny because over a course of a career, you'll have fans who see you as you, and then sometimes they see you on TV and they're like, what the fuck happened? Like, you don't even sound like you on TV. Like, most people, like, in real life, you just talk and you're normal, but on TV, you do this and you're very big. And I'm like, because I can't curse, I have to do something. And otherwise, why would they let me on TV? You know, so you just kind of change your behavior to see if you can do it. And also at the same time, it's like, it's rewarding. Not only do you get to be on TV and talk about shit you want to talk about with people you like, but they fucking give you a check for it. So like, you know, I'll shut my mouth.
Wait, what?
Yes. There's a few bucks involved for those of us that don't curse. Good?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, do you guys have like a white whale for the show that you want to get on there?
That's awesome. I'm taking that expression. Yeah, our white whale. Let me see. Who's the white whale for me? You know, it's going to sound embarrassing, but Ben Affleck at this point? Could have put that together real easily a couple of years ago, not so much now. Him, or honestly, more to the point, I think I would love to talk to Steven Spielberg. I think I'm ready to talk to Steven Spielberg. I've been in this business 22 years.
Yeah.
And I've always been like, I don't need to meet that guy. Not because like I don't like his shit. It's just like, man's a genius. You know what I'm saying? Like reinvented cinema for an age where we're watching people like his fucking childhood friend take over the mantle, become that guy. But like Steven Spielberg, always a fucking amazing storyteller. You know, and cinema was his first chosen language and what he's exceptional at and stuff. But as just a fan of storytelling, like, yeah, I've made some movies and shit, but I just love storytelling in general. He's a true master. So to sit down with him, he's the guy that, you may say the reason like we geek out over things is his entire body of work, whether it be Jaws, or which I was the first fucking thing I probably geeked out over in my life, right? Tie with Batman. Like in 1975, like, oh, I love these, and you try to consume as much as you could. Now, you know, if you love Jaws, you fall down the internet hole, and you can, you know, spend your life in a Jaws-inflected world. Back then, you could see the movie, and that was it. And then if you were lucky, you got the soundtrack, and you could listen to it and kind of relive the movie or something like that, but you couldn't see the movie again. We didn't have cable. We didn't have fucking video. We certainly didn't have streaming. So like Jaws comes out and then goes away. And then like 2 years later, they're like, let's watch it again. They re-release it in theaters. It was tough to geek out in those days. I remember when Jaws finally came on fucking TV, 1979. So it's like 4 years after its cinematic debut on ABC. I had a tape recorder, like a cassette tape recorder. And this is before the days of video. And I just taped the whole thing from the television, and then I would just listen to it on tape all the time. And I think it has a lot to do with why I'm not a very visually oriented storyteller, because I used to do that all the time, just tape movies and listen to them. Even when I worked at Quick Stop and RST in the video store, you put in any fucking movie you want, but generally you're working with the public, so you're not sitting there watching. Film is a medium that requires you to do this. Unfortunately, I'd only paid half attention. I would listen to everything, and so I was a big dialogue fan, but I didn't look at the imagery as much. So when I start my career, it's pretty much all dialogue, and like, well, I think he knows how to turn the camera on. That's about it and stuff. So over a career of watching that man, as I've gotten a little better at my job and shit, I've just watched that dude excel. He was excellent at his first job, created my geekdom with Jaws, continued it on with like Close Encounters, and then of course into Indiana.
Have you ever met him?
Never.
So I've been in Amblin.
I've been in the building, and at one point they're like, he's in the other room. You met him?
Yeah. My experience. So here's the thing. Here's the reason why.
Oh yeah. Why do the unworthy always go first?
Age before beauty.
I guess.
I found myself sitting on the scoring stage. They're mixing the trailer, which they shot. It was like a sneak trailer for Super 8. They shot it before they started shooting the movie because I guess Transformers are coming out. Something's coming out, and they were mixing it. So they're looking at the sounds and the crashes, and it was when the alien was popping out of the train. So the train had crashed, and this thing, something was in there. And they were listening to it, and all of a sudden, Steven Spielberg walks on the stage. I'm sitting there with JJ, which first of all, he's my best friend, so it's not a big deal. Then Steven Spielberg sits here, and they're like, and JJ goes, okay, they're both here. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? They roll it, and then they go, okay, Greg, what do you think? And I'm sitting there with Steven Spielberg and JJ Abrams, and I was tongue-tied. I was like, it's awesome. I didn't have anything to say. And of course, Spielberg had very specific notes that were so brilliant on just sound design, and it made a world of difference. So I will not do that interview unless I'm with you. We have to do that together, because I'm not ready. I'm just like such a fanboy of his.
It'd be amazing if we sit down with him and he's like, I remember this idiot.
He will say that.
Tongue-tied.
He will say that. He was a fan of Heroes. He actually...
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's what I would like to ask him on this show. Like, what do you fucking... Like, he's created so many things that make people geek out. What is the thing? Like, what? Obviously, Tintin was a thing that he fucking was passionate about because the rest of us couldn't give a fuck, but he couldn't wait to make that movie and shit.
Right.
So obviously, he has something that he geeks out about. I would love to find out what it is. Like, so hearing something like, oh, I watched all the Heroes. Like, that would fucking blow my mind.
Me too. And it blew my mind to hear that, and this is hearsay because Tim Kring told me, I guess it's from the source, that he got contacted by Spielberg and he said, look, the show's great. I really love the show. Remember, there's a lot of blood the first season of Heroes. They were cutting heads off and stuff. And then Spielberg said, you don't need to do that. And it's that whole Jaws, the shark's broken, we're going to show very little, and it's your imagination that's much bigger. And so I think Tim really did take that. And also, you know, the network saying, thank God, because the budget is killing us. But they showed a lot less. They showed a lot less gore. It was a lot more to your imagination. When Siler was killing people, it was off camera. and it was really creepier and cooler.
And then the show got canceled.
And then
Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg.
Responsible for Kill Heroes.
Canceled. Yep, yep.
I see how it's done.
My white whale would be Tom Hanks or Harrison Ford. Both guys I've worked with and are incredible. And I've had conversations with both of those guys, not as in depth as I'd want to, but conversations where I'm sitting like at dinner and Harrison's talking, and I'm like, oh my God, this is what a conversation. I mean, those conversations we want to share with everyone. And I think people are comfortable enough with us. And as the show goes, we're going to find our feet. This is a Comic-Con special, and it has really turned great. We literally just came from an interview 10 minutes ago that's going to air tomorrow night. So it is a race, because it's Comic-Con. It's happening right now. But these conversations are unique, and they're unique to the back doors, to the pubs, to the, you know, the restaurants. That's the kind of conversation that we want to bring to the screen. It's not what you're going to see on Entertainment Tonight or Extra or any of that stuff. It's not. That's not our show.
So, first of all, Kevin, I also tape recorded stuff.
Did you tape movies off TV?
No. TV shows, yeah
big time.
That was my favorite TV shows.
It's awesome.
All these kids in the room are like, what's a fucking tape recorder?
Exactly.
It's like, it's kind of like a cell phone, but bigger. And
that's funny.
So, do you guys think, and I'm thinking back to like the first like internet geek out TV shows, like the X-Files.
Yeah.
And all the listserv stuff on you know, alt TV.
Yeah, it was so, before there were images, people were just writing on whiteboards, passion for a show.
Exactly, and really taking apart every little bit from the sound to the dialogue to the story arcs. So you guys look like what you've done is taken that concept, which has evolved over the years, and just totally gone pro with it. That's
pretty much, and yeah. Also just use access. Like, you know, because of what we've done over the last two decades and stuff, we've met a lot of people, a lot of way more talented people and stuff who've ascended far, far higher than we ever have and stuff. But we've been able to stay in touch, and like for a show like this, you get to put that into effect. You get to use that and be like, hey man, let me sit down with this person that I've talked to many times in life and I'm comfortable around, but we've never put a camera on it. And like, let's show people that, the audience, that side of that person, or let's take people somewhere even closer. Like, when they had the Star Trek premiere the other night on the Embarcadero outside. Greg's in Star Trek, so he takes the Geek and Out cameras, not just to the red carpet, but like onto the red carpet and harasses like everybody in the cast.
Yeah.
So Simon Pegg's doing a serious interview and he'll fucking run over, spin him around our cameras, be like, fuck it, Simon Pegg, and then turn him around and run away and shit like that. And that's all you need in some pieces. And then we've got this glorious interview with Michael Giacchino, the composer, about scoring the movie that he did with them like 2 weeks ago. And so it all ties together. It's really nice access. Like, you know, I've watched a lot of cool stuff, and you see a lot of like cool extras online. Everybody gets to do features with people that are in other things. But I ain't seen anything quite like it. Like, this is like, oh shit, like this show will work on a level just a bit different than all the others, because we can reach so many people. We know so many people. We can call in fucking favors and be like, I'm going to show people your dick pic unless you do our show. And fucking, you know, have people like Ben Affleck be like, all right, I'm coming. But that's what I think is going to make the difference. Like, back in the day, you know, I used to talk about this stuff from the outside. And then I got inside, but I still talk about this stuff, as does he. So getting inside and staying inside for a number of years, you know, you build a little safety for yourself. Like at the beginning of my career, I certainly wasn't thinking about stuff like this. I just wanted to make movies. At this point in my career, I'm like, let me try everything before I fucking die. And one of the things I've always wanted to do was see a show that I would have fucking killed to watch when I was a kid. Like a show that collects everything. Like I would watch Entertainment Tonight all the time, but I would lean forward in my fucking seat when they talked about a movie that was like relevant to me in the genre or something like that. This is kind of like that. When I talked about Comic Book Men to AMC the first time, I said it's like Pawn Stars in a comic book store. I said that was my pitch. They turned it into something much better. But the dream was, I used to be forced to watch like Antique Roadshow with my father when I was a kid. Fuck, it felt like punishment, because it was like, look at these old relics from dying people. When you're a kid, it's like, fuck, I don't want to see this. Until they bring in a toy or a comic book, and then you're like, everybody shut up, I'm listening. My story's on now.
You know? Right. And you're going, he's wrong, it's worth much more than
that. Yeah, this guy's out of his fucking mind.
By the way, so this, you know,
hold on 1 second. Yeah. And then you realize at that point that you want an All Berries episode of Antiques Roadshow, where all they do is talk about fucking the things you like and stuff. That's where that show came from, Comic Book Man. This geeking out is kind of a distillation of the same thing. It's like, I love entertainment magazine shows and whatnot, but distill it down to the movies that I really give a fuck about. And I think that's what Greg was able to do.
Yeah, and also, Kevin is so incredibly knowledgeable about this stuff, and I'm catching up. Truly, I am catching up. I mean, I've been very fortunate to be a part of some of the biggest things that are of recent past, you know, but growing up, I didn't read comic books, and I have a graphic novel out right now, and I'm diving into this world, and I'm learning about it, meeting the most interesting, most talented people around. They're the creators of what I've enjoyed, you know, it's a comic book, and then it became this, and then I loved the TV version of it, or whatever. So I'm really catching up and doing my homework. But I think for the audience, it's great to have both perspectives. Because, you know, Kevin might be talking, and my mom is falling asleep, and then I'll come up and say, Antiques Roadshow is great. Jeff Smith's a great chef. I watched that cooking show way back in the day. I mean, like,
fucking hope that your mom would pay attention to you on a TV show. It'd be sad if she wouldn't.
That's true. Yeah.
Fans of this podcast network have, you know, been hearing some version of the show, whether it's Batman on Batman or Hollywood Babylon. Any chance we're going to see those co-hosts eventually pop on?
That's my absolute hope. I remember when they announced the show, I saw somebody online. There was a lot of like, hey, this sounds well, but I, of course, always gravitate toward the negative and stuff. And there was somebody that was just like, great. Two more white guys talking about pop culture. And I was like, shit, god damn it. So instantly we were like, come on, we have to diversify. It can't just be us. We have to bring in a plethora of people.
Absolutely.
This is not just about dudes, and it's not just about fucking white dudes. Everybody fucking loves this shit. So right away we brought on Tiffany Smith, who I've been on many online shows with, including DC Access and stuff. And so we loved her. We're like, boom, come on. So we'll have a female perspective right away.
Yeah.
She's been running around Comic-Con grabbing stuff. And also, like, she's got access to shit that we don't even have access to. Like, I've done a bunch of shit. And I've actually worked with Warner Brothers. And I just did that, like, DC Universe special for them on CW and shit. So, you know, we've been doing geeking out, shooting here. And I've also been shooting for the IMDb all weekend. And the Suicide Squad cast is, like, impossible to get. They just won't. They're not doing anything with them. I mean, like, as historically seems to be with the Warner Brothers DC movie presentations, they bring them all out, they queens wave, and then off they go, and you don't really get to sit down and talk to them and stuff. But, you know, I was like, come on, fucking Silent Bob, I'm going to get what I want. So I sent, like, them, I kept harassing everybody who's putting the show together, like, just reach out, they'll fucking do it for me, I'm a fucking family and shit like that. And they kept coming back like, yeah, they're not doing anybody. I was like, I know they're saying that, but like, here, shoot a video of me. And I made a plea to like Sue Kroll at Warner Brothers, go, Sue, it's Kevin Smith. Like, I just want to talk to the Suicide Squad cast for 2 seconds after their Hall H. Like, this is easy. We'll work this out. You know, I'm a big fan, thanks. And they were like, yeah, Kevin, we love you, but no. Not at all. So like, no access was it. They were very kind. They were like, if you want to go to the premiere in New York, we can let you go there. But like, they're not doing anything in San Diego other than the panel and stuff. And of course, we've heard, you know, the panel's going to be big because other things are happening at the panel. So understandable and whatnot. Tiffany works for DC All Access, and Tiffany's going to talk to the Suicide Squad.
Yep.
Tiffany's got more fucking juice than Kevin Smith. Tiffany Smith, more power in this industry than Kevin Smith.
Too Smith.
So she's an instantly great hire because, boom, she'll get us footage that we couldn't fucking get ourselves.
She's also really smart.
And she's fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, she's whip smart, and she's deep in the genre, all the genres. If you've ever watched DC All Access, she's definitely a DC girl, but she's a genre person all the way, man. So she's great to have. I would love to bring in Mark Bernardin, who I host Batman on Batman with. Mark also edits the LA Times film section, so he's no slouch, you know what I'm saying? It's not just, hey, my buddy knows a thing or two. He's fucking legit in the business. Ralph, I would love to, of course, and I asked him when we started putting the show together. At first he said, no, hopefully he's going to reconsider, because Ralph has cool ideas for pieces.
I think he's going to reconsider. I talked to him about it. We both love Ralph, so
Ralph is fantastic. So yeah. Hopefully, like, because we did a pilot for Babylon, Hollywood Babylon on AMC, like 2-3 years ago or whatever, and it didn't go. They killed the unscripted division at that point, and so the show didn't go anywhere. And there was a great piece on that show that I would love to bring to this show, or just have Ralph redo or whatever, where he sat down with the guy from Karate Kid, who was like, put him in a body bag. and just did this fucking 15-minute legacy interview with a guy who's like, I had one line that lived in infamy and talked about his fucking life. It was pretty fucking cool.
That's what we've talked about, is the things that have become iconic to us. It could be the star of the movie, or they could be someone like that, who we've all, we just associate with a property that you go, oh man, I love Karate
Kid. Like, I talked to Newt, man. Yeah. From, like, you know, they're doing the
finish him.
Newt wasn't, that was my holy grail at Con this year. The moment I heard they were doing an anniversary panel for Aliens, first thing I asked is, like, fucking Newt gonna be there? Because you never see her, man. She's just gone. She's a vapor, a ghost. And then all of a sudden, they were like, she's on the panel. So the whole fucking Con, I'm like, that's the only thing I'm interested in. Because that fucking performance, one of the greatest child performances ever made. And then she never did anything else. I'm like, what? I gotta know. What the fuck happened and shit? So I got to meet her and sit down and talk to Carrie Ann, who played Newton. And sat down, did an interview, 15, 20 minutes. Everything I wanted to know, not only did I know, but at the end of the interview, I'm like, I gotta tell you, your life turned out better than the fictional life I had constructed for you after being a big fan of Aliens and stuff like that. Like, you made the right choices. Like, this is incredible. This environment, this show gives us a chance to talk to folks like that. So it's not just like, hey, it's Matt Damon. It's just like, hey, let's talk to Newt. And it's not like, where are they now? But it's like, these are people that are indelible. Like, I remember her probably more than I remember some blood relatives of mine. Things that she said in a fucking movie and shit. Like,
we have a producer on the show who I'm in business with at Bandwagon. We're partners. And did he disappear?
He did.
He was right there! Oh, anyway, if you look up Brad Savage, he's been in more movies as a child actor, and then into, you know, his teen years.
Do you know who Brad is? Brad is the guy in fucking Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn, where they're like, you piss in that fucking heater. Right? Like, you just,
exactly. You
shuddered because that, I remember seeing that movie when I was a kid, and it's about Russia invading America, and the scariest thing to me was, like, they made him take his dick out in front of everybody. That would be the worst thing that ever happened to me. Like, that was a terrifying moment in film history for me. And Brad is
yeah, and Brad
Brad's
has
partner.
A, and a child actor. He's worked with
the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Apple Dumpling Gang. He was Jodie Foster's first kiss. So we call him the spatula because he flipped her. And, I mean, where's Brad? Is Brad Savage out there? We should definitely bring him in here for a little bit.
Also, Salem's Lot. He's the dead boy.
Yeah,
Salem's
Lot.
First kid who gets killed, man.
So anyway, that's the kind of Brad is like, you don't want to interview me. And we're like, what are you talking about?
I was like, dude, I could do three specials on fucking your entire career.
Where is he? Brad Savage, everybody!
Brad's a producer and a commercial director and stuff, but Brad started his career in this business. Acting.
Stop it.
No, dude. Fucking,
why
it's amazing.
Am I here? Hello.
Look at that face. That's right? The same face that he had when he was a little kid.
It's true.
Which I guess would make sense.
It's kind of the same face.
Tell him you met Disney. I mean, nobody.
Well,
you can.
He actually was. He was. I didn't actually get to meet him.
Okay, tell your closest to Disney story.
I got to hang out on the lot as a kid. Kind of grew up there for several years. Just it was the culture. It was the whole, just the place felt different than any other studio lot. It was, they didn't pay you anything, but what was missing, it's made up in just like the warmth. Literally, you walk down the street and everyone's like, hello, hello, good morning, good morning. Like, literally,
cartoon birds.
Yeah, cartoon birds. It just had that vibe.
What were they making around the time that you were on the lot? Like, so who were you seeing? Who were your contemporaries?
I was doing the Apple Dumpling Gang.
And for those who don't know, who's in that cast?
Bill Bixby, Tim Conway, Don Knotts were like little partners in that one. And just the whole, all the regulars, you know, all the ones, the Slim Pickens and the, trying to think of all that.
Also, Escape from Witch Mountain or the other side
Return,
of the mountain?
Return from Witch Mountain. The second mountain, yeah, movie. And
second mountain movie in the mountain trilogy.
Yes, exactly. It was a blast. It was a fun kind of era. Again, just everything was geared for the family, and so all the people that worked there just were so happy to be there. Which, you know, a lot of lots you go on, and it's just like people are kind of doing their grind. They're working 14, 16-hour days, and they're just kind of not necessarily in the mood, but. That's one thing they really nailed. It might have changed through the years because different people have, you know, bought and sold the company, but that sort of time frame was just crazy. It was just amazing.
And what did you work with Jodie Foster on?
Jody and I did a movie called Echoes of a Summer with Richard Harris.
It was like five
people in the cast. It was a play turned into a movie. Very depressing story, but it was a great role, and it was a great, you know, fun experience. We shot in Canada for months. And then we also did a series called Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, which was a film, and we did 13 episodes of that. And she was just the coolest kid. Just a friend, you know, we're kids, we're buddies.
So we're going to get Jodie Foster on this.
Yes, yes, we are.
I'll tell you right now.
If someone could just give me your number.
Just tell her we're making another mountain movie.
What does that mean?
I don't know
what
that means.
But this is the kind of thing that we're talking about, you know, from the biggest stars, the friends of his and mine, and also Brad and all the people that we've worked with for forever.
And the Weinstein Company has become...
Oh yeah, the Weinstein Company is really responsible for this show from the very beginning, because they contacted us, and they've obviously been in business with you forever. So Patrick, the Weinstein Company especially, and David Glasser, these guys have had this dream of doing this show for a long time, and it's their passion that really carried this through.
And to be fair, a long time is a year. When did you guys start?
Oh, that's true.
It was only a year ago.
A year ago.
You guys started the journey.
Pitching it and getting it going.
Yeah. The geeks have truly inherited the earth. I don't know. It's like one of those things, like, I mean, I don't want to compare it to American history where it's like, we worked so hard for America and finally we're here. What do we do now? But we did. There was a time when, like, this wasn't the dominant culture. Now it is. Now, like, there was a time I had to explain to people who Stan Lee was. And now my mom's like, I saw Stan Lee in the movie, and she can cite the cameos and stuff. The Marvel movies alone have taught people that weren't part of comic book culture to be comic book readers, to expect a next installment, to know that these things are connected and not necessarily sequels, to see how characters follow over. That's something we did in youth for fun because we just love this shit. But now they've taken that entertainment, taken it to a new medium, made a lot of money doing it, but turned everybody into who we used to be. And I was never one of those cats that just like, fuck you, I liked them before they were cool, before they got signed. The more the merrier, man, especially with this shit. The only way we were ever gonna push through was with dominant numbers. It couldn't just be like for us and not for you. Mm-hmm. It's inclusive, it's for everybody. You walk out on that floor, man, you see all genders, all fucking races, all colors and stuff like that, because everybody dreams. Everybody has fantasy in this genre, this whole world of pop culture. It's nothing but fantasy, the fuel of fantasy, the dream of being something else, something other, something better.
And we need that today more than anything, I think.
So I think now that everybody feels that way, you know, how long will it last? I always look at sports, because when I was growing up, sports was the dominant pastime, you know, in America, and movies and entertainment was there, but like it was fucking sports. So much so that like athletes were, that was considered a real job. Like you can grow up to be a baseball player or a football player or something. And it's all predicated on nothingness, right? Like I've nothing but respect for sports, but it's a fucking game. At the end of the day, whoever wins or loses doesn't change the world one iota and shit. It's just something to do, to, you know, while you're waiting for fucking death. That's what movies are. Same thing. It's just a pastime. Nothing great comes out of them and shit. It's just a little story that you spend your time in, or a TV show or a comic book or something like that. But at the same time, for anybody who loves those things, whether it be sports, TV, comic books, we know it's much more than that. It's fucking religion. You know that somebody doing something with like more passion than you've ever seen in your life, even if it's something insignificant like writing a comic book or fucking creating a cartoon or fucking scoring a goal in hockey. If you do it like you're trying to save the galaxy, like you're doing it with all stakes at cost, that's an enriching tale that invites people in. Suddenly there's a story being told there. In our medium, there's literally stories turning pages. In sports, it was the idea behind the action. How did this kid from nowhere get there and stuff like that? And I always saw that as like, how come the shit I like isn't treated seriously? Why aren't there t-shirts and fucking hats for the things that like movies? They're just as legit as fucking sports. Now they are. We live in a world where like they're shoulder to shoulder. It's no longer like, you can't even fucking make a movie where like, imagine trying to remake Revenge of the Nerds today. Like, it wouldn't even make sense.
By the way, my brother's in Revenge of the Nerds.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. If you, my brother is one of the Platt brothers.
Really?
That you know, at the talent competition. That's my brother. Yeah, Brad Grunberg. He's a great actor, by the way. Really funny comedian and actor. But yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying.
You can't make that movie today because there's no such thing as like the sports bully is fucking picking on the nerd. It's fucking vice versa. You know, it's just like, hey, the nerd is a billionaire. And now the sports guy works for him on the team that the nerd owns. So everything's changed dramatically, as you said. Is there a next mission? I think the next mission is this, honestly. When I was a kid, I wanted, it's going to sound weird for a middle-aged white man to be talking about diversity, but when I was a kid, I wanted to see my world, and I didn't. And so in my movies and shit, I depicted my world, which was this shit. Now everybody sees my world, you know what I'm saying? So I don't thirst for that anymore. I don't sit there going, how come I don't see what me and my friends talk about? How come there's nobody sitting around talking about fucking whether, you know, what happened to the Death Star contract or shit like that, like getting deep into this stuff. Now we all do. But now it's about diversity. You know, like I got a kid of my own, right? And she's 17. If you can't see it, you can't necessarily be it, right? Like in my case, I saw Richard Linklater do it first. He made a movie. I was like, fuck, I want to try that. You got to see it to be it. I saw a white guy do it. Like my kid can't see a bunch of white guys do something and be like, oh, anything's possible. The only lesson there is anything's possible if you're a fucking white guy. So it's important to diversify, bring in other people. That's why I like this show so much, because it's not pandering to one specific audience beyond the whole, which is now the dominant whole of those that love pop culture. Under that umbrella, that's everybody, all the fucking colors of the rainbow.
My job, I think, is to really open doors for Jews in Hollywood. I want to bring them. I got to bring them in. They just do not have a fair shake right now.
It's about time they had some representation.
Right here, baby. Right here. Yes.
But that to me would be the thing. If the next mission was anything, sorry to just conclude, it would be about bringing everybody in. Our community tends to be divisive, you know, because we're very opinionated and shit. And you know, sometimes it gets into like fucking gender wars, as we've seen with Gamergate or Ghostbusters. And I shudder to say those words because you say them and you're linked to them, and then people online want to swarm and you fucking know what you're talking about. I'll say it up front, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I do see hostility in a world where it's like, you fuckers, we fought so hard to not be the other.
Dude,
and to be accepted
true,
for all this shit. And now, like, you want to divide within like, makes no sense. Like, now that we're accepted, why the fuck would you fight about this? Why would you fight a girl Ghostbuster movie? Who gives a shit? Wait 2 minutes, there'll be another guy Ghostbuster movie. They don't even wait 10 years to revamp shit anymore.
True.
They reboot shit like fucking, I remember after Nolan's Batman ended, it was like, it'll be 10 years before we see another Batman movie, man, because he fucking defined, what, Batman? Batfleck? You know, and suddenly we were off and running and stuff. So I would like to see more inclusion, more diversity, more like, you know, more people accepting of diversity. It's one thing to be like, yeah, I like diversity. Accept that fucking diversity. Don't just champion and be like, well, it's a good idea. Pick up that fucking book and read that book. Just because it doesn't have a dude character on the cover, man, might be interesting to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, think about, I try to think about this. My whole life, a lot of people that weren't me, meaning like young white male, have been forced to read stories of like white males going to save the world over and over again. It's my time to kick back and let somebody else enjoy those stories. First and foremost, I love what Marvel's doing. I know they're taking a bunch of shit from some cats online, but I love that they're like, look, we're going to mix this up, man. So Iron Man's this girl, and now fucking Thor is this woman, and Hulk. Everything can change so that somebody can open a comic book and live the dream that Stan Lee started with Spider-Man. When Stan Lee talks about Spider-Man, he says, the beauty of that character is because he's covered in head to toe, like Batman, he's open right here so you can tell who he is. He's a white guy. So. But he said, the beauty of Spider-Man being covered from head to toe is you didn't know who the fuck he was. Could be a boy, could be a girl, could be any race or anything like that. And he's like, and a child could really let themselves go in that world until, you know, Peter Parker took off the mask and shit like that. But I like that idea. That was a dream, man, that some dude had years and years ago. And it seems like we're finally coming into fruition with the very company that he worked at years and years ago and stuff. So I would love to see more of that. Like, champion, you're going to see the same shit from the same people over and over again unless you get different players into the game. We had this discussion driving over about T-shirts because, you know, I'm a Waking Baker, so I analyze everything. So we're driving over, and it's like a plethora of T-shirts here, you know, in San Diego Comic-Con, T-shirt capital of the world. And I was like, we live in a golden age of fucking T-shirts right now. When I was a kid, like 70s, a lot of great T-shirts, but in the 80s, everything went big box, and everyone started wearing the same fucking shirts, very generic and whatnot. But since the advent of the internet, and now since like everybody gets to express, right? Like anybody can be an artist at this point. There's no more, oh, that's for them. Anybody can do it. You can come up with a clever fucking one-liner, and you maybe never come up with anything for the rest of your life, but you could come up with a clever one-liner to juxtapose with an image, put on a t-shirt, and you can make that now, and suddenly like wear that out in the world or fucking sell it on one of these t-shirt sites, and people are going, that's fucking cool. And they may never know that you're the specific author, but fuck, you're in the game, son. You know, at that point, you're out there. You're expressing yourself. You're an artist too. You're not that much different from me and this guy or anybody else who's standing on a stage. You had an idea, a cool idea, you put it out there, somebody saw it and like, that's fucking dope and shit. And if you're lucky, a lot of people see it. And maybe a lot of people buy it. But what I love about t-shirts right now is diversity, man. You don't have to fucking sell 10,000 in order to make that shirt. That used to be the case. Like, we can't sell as many units. We're not going to make that fucking shirt. That joke's for like 3 people. You can make a joke for 3 people now. And somehow that can fucking go a lot further than trying to mass market. So if this marketplace would just take the cue from the t-shirt world, man, just like anybody could fucking play. Anybody can fucking do this. You know how much talent it takes to write on a t-shirt? None whatsoever. There's no such thing as fucking talent when it comes to self-expression.
But don't you think we're seeing this? I mean, with the internet and that everybody's got a camera and everybody can record things, that's what we're seeing. We asked when we interviewed JJ, he was like, what's his advice for kids that are in the middle of nowhere that don't have access to Hollywood and didn't grow up with friends like I did? You know, he said, just make it. Make it. There's nothing stopping you from making it. As an actor growing up, I had to wait for someone like this guy to hire me. I could stand in the mirror and do it, or I could go, you know, do it in the theater. But again, somebody had to hire me for that play. Now you can just do it, and there's nothing stopping you from doing it. And so it's all inclusive.
It's amazing advice too, especially coming from J.J. Abrams. Once again, somebody sitting at home watching that. If you're a white male, you're like, fucking hey, man. If he did it, I can do it and stuff. Maybe my 12-year-old kid. I don't have a 12-year-old daughter, but if I did, she's 17 now. She ain't gonna watch that interview and go like, oh, I can do that. She's like, well. They can do it, you know what I'm saying? So having representation, if you can see it, you can be it.
Sure.
All you have to do is show somebody doing a fucking job that they'd never thought about before. Like a lot of people love to be filmmakers and stuff. I want to direct and whatnot. I got a niece, she's autistic and stuff. She's a living IMDb. That's what she knows, like Rain Man with movies and shit. So in movie world, she's like, I want to be a director because that's what directors do. They tell the story and stuff. But she's fundamentally having a hard time because of her autism. Putting together storytelling in the way that, like, in her head, it's one way, out in the world, it's another way. So my sister, her mom, the kid loves trailers, like crazy. He could dissect the trailer and shit like that, tell you which movie's gonna work and not based on the trailer alone. And my sister says to her, like, you know, there's a whole world where that's what people do. Somebody cut that trailer. The same person that directed the movie didn't cut the trailer. And oftentimes, whoever cuts the trailer is far more talented than the filmmaker making the movie. I got 2 hours to tell a story. Motherfucker cuts a trailer, got 2 minutes to figure out how to sell that and tell the story and stuff.
Yeah.
So my sister's telling the kid, like, you could cut trailers. And the kid's going, that's a thing? Like, if you can understand it or see it, you can kind of be it. And the more we can kind of show people enjoying or doing things or telling stories that haven't been told by the same people over and over again. I know that jeopardizes my fucking position in the world, but a lot of people have heard enough from fucking Kevin Smith. You know what I'm saying? It's time to hear from other people whose stories have never fucking been told. And what I love about Clerks is that it made a lot of people want to try that because it looks fucking insanely simple. It's like they're hanging out with friends and fucking just rolling a shitty camera and whatnot. I've met many people who like said, I'm doing this because I saw Clerks and it made it seem possible. But again, Clerks is like fucking literally a black and white movie full of like white people and stuff. Needs to be more diversification out there. I think that's what'll make this fucking stronger. That's the next level.
It's my job on the show. I make fart jokes. I talk about how good he smells. Kevin smells like weed, and I like a little weed now and again as well. So it's a good smell, and it permeates the studio. We're all happy.
Yeah. I have a little pig pen cloud that just follows me.
Exactly.
So you talked about diversity, and I'm thinking about the whole geek culture, and I've had conversations with some of the Star Trek people about the 50th anniversary and where we were in the mid-60s and where we are now, all the xenophobia and isolationism, and this, like, the antidote, it's the next frontier to push somebody else's antidote, push farther to bring things back to where they need to be.
Like, to bring things back, like where it began. Think about it, Gene Roddenberry had a pretty fucking revolutionary vision for not just science fiction, but also what fandom became. It's like, to everybody, look at that bridge, rainbow colors. It's Benetton ad before Benetton existed, as they say. So at this point, man, it's like, yeah, it feels like you're right. We have to, even though we're talking about moving forward, it is kind of moving backwards, where they seemed far more inclusive back then than they did now. But that was like depicting a story. The problem is, it's not a problem, but the people who started talking about pop culture the most and the loudest tend to look like us. But it didn't stay that way, because once people started seeing, this counts? You can fucking talk about this shit and not be ridiculed and whatnot? Everybody gets to play that game. So hopefully, I'm certainly not going, our show is fucking going to kick open the doors. I mean, look at us. We look like the problem. But we're going to try to solve the problem, if there's necessarily a problem, just by bringing in a lot more. Wow, that Star Trek fucking analogy is really...
Yeah, but you know what? That Star Trek, that was a beautiful future. That was the future back then. And look at it and say, look, the bridge needs to be a rainbow of culture, so hopefully this is going to be the future.
Rod Roddenberry told him yesterday, IDIC, right? Infinite diversity, infinite combination.
Yeah. Is that, wait, say it again?
Infinite diversity.
Infinite combination.
What is that?
IDIC. That's kind of what he told me. If you want to synthesize the Star Trek world and concept,
and it's I mean, that goes beyond Star Trek, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's applicable to life in general.
Yeah.
Can we have this interview on camera on Geeking Out, please? Like, seriously, this is what we're talking about.
Talk to him, we'll do it.
No, him. I want to talk to her. Roddenberry, I had on the carpet the other day. He's great. Like, this is a great interpretation of what he said and you know, analysis. It's awesome.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, folks. Enjoy the rest of your con.
All the cons ever. Awesome. Terrific. I thought I was the only one
watch on
audio
Sunday.
Taping anything.
Oh my God, that was my
can
life
I
when I was
speaking of writing and stuff, I have a novel coming out, Penguin Random House, in October.